Orleans County Historical Association. I am Ethel Willis, interviewing Miss Martha Thomas in her home at 69 South Main Street, Lindenville, New York. The date is December 13, 1979. Miss Thomas, will you please identify yourself?
I'm Martha Thomas, and my mother was Ellen Greenman. My father was Bert V. Thomas.
Someone told me there was something interesting about how your father and mother met.
Well, I guess they met through his uncle and aunt. He lived in Newfane, and the uncle and aunt lived outside of Lindenville. And he came over, and they evidently were friends of my mother, so they met that way.
Oh, I see. When were you born?
21st of February. 1895.
And where were you born?
Right here in this house, built by my mother's father, Joseph Greenman. His grandfather came to this county early and took up land on which the son, his name was William B. Greenman, and his son, Joseph B. Greenman, continued on the farm. And then his son, Joseph, my grandfather, continued on the farm until he moved to the village. And he lived in a house with another couple for a short time, then moved across from the stores and lived there several years and had this house built. You want that about
the
pony?
What date was this house built?
1874. Mother was 12 years old. There are 20 rooms in the house, and that was the complete family.
20 rooms.
And while they lived across from the stores, they had a pony that would march, keep time to music if it heard a band. And it also was a trick pony. The one neighbor didn't believe that it would come if you pointed the finger at it and said, "General." So he tried it, and the horse came, and he hurried back into his house. There was a fence all the way around my grandfather's place. So he thought, well, that was just a happenstance, as they used to say. So he stood in the door and said, "General," and pointed his finger. And that time the horse went into the woodshed.
It doesn't pay to doubt a horse, does it? Did you have brothers and sisters?
A sister, Zeta, and a brother, Joseph.
Are they still living?
No. My brother died about, early 1960s. And my sister in 1966, she had a son, and he had two sons and a daughter.
So now you live in the family home alone?
Yes, yes. Except that it's made into an apartment upstairs.
Oh, I see. Is the apartment occupied?
Oh, yes. Never's been empty.
Never's been empty. Well, what else would you like to tell me about your schooling or anything like that?
Well, I think maybe I'd start with something about a bakery that we had, and then the vandalism this fall. In 1907, Spaulding and Hatch had a bakery in the Gray Block, which is across from what used to be the drugstore on the west side of Main Street. And they made several kinds of bread, cookies, fried cakes, and cakes on special occasions. And they sold for 20 to 40 cents apiece.
You couldn't get a fried cake for that now.
No, not one. There were two telephone systems. One was the home and the other the bell. And the bakery had both phones. Then in Lindenville in 1907, got a railroad engine rim as a fire gong. And the donation was made by Paul Warren of Buffalo. He was formerly of Lindenville, a brother of Mrs.
Lloyd,
Charles Warren.
Fairman.
He was a passenger agent on the LS and MS Railroad. I don't know what those numbers stand for. The Fairmans lived in the Warren home. And the fire bell was placed on the west side of Main Street. Then, after a time, it was moved to the east side of Main Street when the fire company had a building north of the big hotel. But when the Grange bought that property, next door, they moved the fire gong back onto the west side of Main Street. And this fall, vandals threw it into the creek. And the next morning, the next day, the Methodist Youth Fellowship rescued it from the creek and put it back in place.
Is that, that isn't still used as a fire gong?
If the power goes off, or if something happens so that the siren doesn't blow, sometimes it freezes. And if necessary, they use it. And it will raise you right out of bed.
Is that loud?
Well, I guess so.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It doesn't seem to come in as loud as it might, but it takes it. And Miss Phippany, Lydia Phippany, began teaching here about 1907. And my sister went to her, and she was an excellent teacher, but very strict. The youngsters all liked her, though.
Children do like a strict teacher.
And Miss Ione Andrew of Barneyvelt, New York, was also a teacher.
Of where?
Barneyvelt.
Oh.
In the vicinity of Lyons, or Utica.
In that area.
Mm-hmm. And she married Ernest S. Breed. She was an excellent teacher, too. And Dr. Arthur M. Wright had a large practice in New York City as a nose, ear, and throat specialist. He had formerly been with St. Vincent's Hospital there. But he often came to Lindenville to visit his parents, Dr. and Mrs. R.B. Wright, and they had a drugstore north of the bridge, north of the big mill. back of that, there was an ice house near the pond, back of the mill.
And tell me about the ice house. Tell about that.
Well, it was back of the roller mills, and after, that's a complicated deal. It goes into the school story, too. When I started school, the schoolhouse was on Main Street, where the present school is. It was a two-story frame building. They moved it slightly and built a school there about 1907 or so.
A frame building? Also a frame building?
No, that was a brick building. And that was two-story. Very nice. I think I went to school in the wooden one until I was in, well, fifth or sixth grade. That's when they built the next one. And after they built that, the frame one was moved by the bridge, by the north side of the creek, between Riverside and the stream. And Pearl Platten had a garage downstairs, and the Enterprise was upstairs. And I would say about a year or two later, that burned. There was an explosion downstairs, and the Burnetts, who ran the paper, were working upstairs, and they lost everything. They hurried down, lost mm-hmm. everything. Then they bought that little building back of the mill, put in equipment, and between the time of the fire and the equipping of the building, they printed a little news sheet to keep it going. Then they moved, had Morell Dates and Charles Dates move that building with all its equipment over across Main Street, just east of what is now continued as a newspaper office for the Lindenville Enterprise, until, well, as long as it existed. Then it was torn down and is now the parking lot for the laundromat. After the fire that destroyed the garage, Errol Barnum built the hotel, and he had a good practice of clients, whatever you want to say, with transients, because we had so many trains in and out of the village.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, to go back to the ice house, they cut the ice from the mill pond, did they?
Yes. Dr. Fairman also had an ice house, and that is still standing. Different ones would cut ice over years.
And how did they store it in the ice house?
Well, in blocks with sawdust between.
Uh-huh.
And the buildings were, well, not insulated like we do now, but evidently the sawdust insulated it.
Yes, the sawdust would.
Uh-huh. Between the wall uh-huh. and the ice.
I wanted you to tell that because today's children don't know anything about ice cut from a pond. All they know is the kind you get out of the ice maker in the refrigerator.
Yeah. That's right. For many years, Edward Edmonds, who lived on one of Joseph Greenman's farms for 30 years, delivered milk from door to door. And we'd have to put our bottle, or our can, usually a quart can or 2-quart can, on the steps at night. He'd bring the milk in the morning in one of your dishes, pick up the one you left, take it home and bring it back the next day. And that was repeated time after time.
And if you were lucky enough to get the milk from the top of the can, you got pure cream.
Yes.
And if it was from the bottom of the can, you got water.
Yep.
Which you paid the same price for it.
Mm-hmm. No, your bottom of your can was just good skim milk.
Yeah, skim milk, yep.
Yep. And after he retired, his grandson, Leon Edmonds, continued. Then later, Hugh Fraser, or Bert Swan, or William Carpenter delivered milk that way.
And it wasn't pasteurized milk either.
No, and it was delicious. It
sure was. Raw milk.
About 1907, the supervisors voted to widen certain roads in the town, in the county. And the town of Yates got the road between Lindenville and St. John's Corners. That was the junction of 63 and 18. And it was widened about 4 feet from 12 to 16.
Mm-hmm. And that was called St. John's Corners.
Milton St. John and his wife and his sister lived on the corner.
Oh.
And the house burned down years ago.
Mm-hmm.
About 2 o'clock one morning, maybe 1897 or 1900, Petrie's evaporator burned, including tons of cabbage and evaporated apples.
Hmm.
It was located on the east side of South Lindenville Road and just outside the village, south of the Cooper place up here, but before you got to the Petrie place, the house,
uh-huh.
And it was back from the road.
Just south of the village line then.
Yeah. And it was back, there were years that you could see the remains of it,
mm-hmm.
But it's all gone now.
Yeah.
We were living in the little house next door at that time. That was where my sister was. That's how I know about what time it was.
Uh-huh.
The growth of rural free delivery was noted in a paper in the early 1900s. It started with an appropriation of $10,000. In 4 years, it had been raised to $40,000. And 10 years later, it was $37
million.
We had 4 carriers from this post office. Then in the Thomas block, George Weber, Robert Fisk, David Bangham, Andrew Edmonds. Mrs. Edmonds was his sub-carrier, substitute. James Strawn was Mr. Fisk's substitute. Bert Thomas was Mr. Bangham's substitute. And I think Charles Meland did it for Mr. Weber. I'm okay. Not sure about that. And later they were Chester Chafee, Andrew and Leon Edmonds, and Robert Fisk. And now, just recently, it was Robert B. Peters and Raymond Bates.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Ingram was flagman at the Rome, Watertown, and Ogdensburg Railroad crossing on Main Street. Carol Fippany brought the mail from 4 trains up to the post office, or took the mail down. And later...
4 trains a day.
Later, his son Floyd took the mail. Well, we had one each way that stayed overnight. One would go at 7:40 and the other at 8 o'clock, Rochester and Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was one that came in from the west at 9 o'clock, and we used to have school children from Miller's come on that.
Oh.
For years. Then there was one at about 10 o'clock that came from Rochester. Then in the afternoon, there was one went west shortly after 4 o'clock, and the youngsters would go home on that. And one later that came from Buffalo toward Rochester, and at 8 o'clock at night, both trains came in and stayed overnight to go back to Rochester or Buffalo the next morning.
Uh-huh. Well, that's some difference.
Yes, now we don't have a train at all.
No.
In 1908 or 9, Miss Abby Berry, a Sunday school teacher here, and her sister, Mariette Berry, lived on Riverside Street and put a thank you notice in the paper for flowers in memory of their aunt, Mrs. Sina B. Church, who had lived in her home where Church Street now is. There's a stained glass window in the Methodist Church in memory of William and Sina B. Church. Also, eight other memorial windows in the church.
Mm-hmm. That is how it happened to be called Church Street then, though.
Yes,
uh-huh.
That's right.
I often wondered about that because there's no church on the street.
No, I can't tell just when it was, but I can remember going to see Mrs. Church and Miss Selina Johnson, who lived with them. About 1900, the land on the east side of Main Street between the river, a stream, and the hotel to the south was low, like it is back of the garage. And there was a railing so people wouldn't fall off the sidewalk because they're quite deep down.
Mm-hmm.
And it had two iron rails. And back from Dates's home on Maple Avenue to the creek, there's quite a hill, and the youngsters used to and still do slide down Dates's hill on their sleds in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
There were no buildings from the hotel to Riverside. Then Mr. Langdon built the North Side Livery Stable. In 1910, Burr Beecher built the Lindenville Garage next to the creek, between that and the livery stable. And that burned in 1910, killing 8 horses. Starkey had a movie house, and that was between the drive barn and Woodrow's blacksmith shop. Was called the New Linden Theater. It was used for all kinds of entertainments until maybe, 1925. In 1930, it became the property of the flourishing Lindenville Grange, patrons of husbandry, and was remodeled into an excellent hall. It's now incorporated in the south side of Crosby Whipple's garage. The blacksmith shop was the second fire station. The first one was over on the creek bank, pond bank. And there was a little building beside it. And those two buildings, at that time we had a steam engine, fire engine.
Oh.
And people, some of the people who had teams, would hurry down to hook onto it. And they could get steam up to 100 pounds from cold water in 6.5 minutes.
Oh.
And later, those two buildings were built together and made a dwelling, which burned within the past year. And we had hose carts then. And the village or someone built a fish chute at the north side of the creek beside the mill so that the fish could jump into the pond. They called it a fish ladder, too.
Uh-huh.
And the fish would flop up. N.J. Berry built a coal chute beside their bean house next to the railroad. And after a while, Burdett and Arthur Squires built another one there. Ella Morgan was a small lady who could properly punish big boys. She'd take them by the collar and shake them. She was preceptress in our high school at the turn of the century.
We had a sixth grade teacher who shook a boy one day and broke his arm doing it. But his father was a doctor, and he didn't blame the teacher at all because he knew that his son was a mischief maker.
They don't do that anymore.
Uh-huh.
In 1908, something new was, or in educational agriculture, was promised by the New York State Agricultural Association. It was a farm train, an engine, a coach that was a lecture room, and a coach that was an exhibit room. And it had stops of 45 minutes wherever it stopped at each village. And the Farmers Institutes were conducted here for many years. I can remember my folks going, and usually in February. In 1908, I noticed a clipping in the paper that there was much damage done to buildings, and some orchards lost a dozen or more trees because of a high wind. It lasted 12 hours.
1908.
Mm-hmm. Even the pond had white caps.
For goodness sake, that quiet little pond.
Yeah. And the old Clark Homestead dwelling, located where the Presbyterian manse is, burned about that same time. The alarm was pealed out on the fire gong, which some called Peter Quick. The paper reported that Clarence Johnson managed an evaporator for American Food Products of Rochester and bought thousands of apples in different parts of the state. And he also managed one in Barker for the same company. And the price of apples, dried apples, was 60 to 70 cents, 100 pounds.
Oh, my word. And now for 60 cents, you get about six apples in the store.
I think you get four.
Four? I haven't bought any lately.
I haven't either. In 1909, we had a millinery store next door to the Van Curen store. That was a shoe repair and a harness repair shop. And upstairs and downstairs was Malin, John Malin's grocery store. He was selling out at that time. And in the spring, Van Curen moved downstairs and lived upstairs. And the building stood beside a large tree where the bank now stands. And in 1909, George Weber put a new soda fountain in his building next to the Turner Market. And years later, he had that building torn down and built a new brick block. And he discovered quicksand, and it took a long time to get it built.
Hmm.
And Cora Rutherford built a new house across from the school. I remember Mrs. Rutherford when we'd go to school, and that was at the time the frame schoolhouse was there. John McCauley improved the hotel on the west side of Main Street, putting in new windows, redecorating all through the building, and fitting up a writing room in the room north of the hall. And he painted the outside. And that hotel had a porch downstairs and a porch upstairs all the way across the front of the building. And it stood on the west side of Main Street, south of Eagle Street, where Earl Henyon built his new home years ago. It burned one night, I would say around in the 20s. And it was a real bad fire, but it was being torn down at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that Mr. Henyon could build.
Uh-huh.
And north of it was a two-story building. Downstairs, George Grapes had a shop, shoe shop. Upstairs, Edward Henyon had a barber shop. And he moved from there before the fire into a small building north of the drugstore. And he was there the rest of his life. Dr. A.D. Haynes, an eye and ear specialist, would come to Edgar Hill's store every year and stay 5 days. And people would go in and have their eyes examined and get glasses. He did a good business. And the Bell telephone system was purchased by the New York Telephone Company about 1908. The school used to sponsor a lecture course of entertainments. There would be 5 programs in the series in the winter. And the village installed 16 electric lights at the street corners and a few places between. In 1909, Church Street had been laid out and accepted that
by the village.
The street might be extended across Johnson's Creek sometime later.
Uh-huh.
So when the new bridge was built, the plank bridge with the iron railing framework was moved to the end of Church Street by the creek so that it could be used to span the creek in case the street was extended.
But it never has been.
No, never has been. The Lindenville Mill, roller mill, was probably built around the middle of the 19th century. Some records say 1856. But they can't prove the date. Some think it's 1837. It was frequently remodeled and finally became a three-story building. William Anderson, Hiram Bickford, Eno Reamer, Clarence Gracie, and William Page were various owners. And while Mr. Page had it, it burned. And he built a one-story motorized mill, I think.
So they didn't use the water power after that?
No. The fire was in 1940, about 5 o'clock in the morning, possibly from spontaneous combustion. And there was wind and sparks went everywhere. And the roofs of various buildings caught. We had Medina and Barker fire companies, and they saved every building except the R.B. Wright drugstore, and that burned, and it also damaged the residence that was attached to it. And Dr. Wright, Dr. Leon Wright, was a dentist, and he had upstairs in the drugstore, and he lost everything. And even antique furniture in his home. He was living there in the house. The passing of the aged maple tree in front of our schoolhouse in 1979 reminds me of the big old elm that stood on South Main Street some 50 years ago, near the Clark. It was on the Clark property, and it was near where Cecil Wright built his home, which is now the Presbyterian manse.
Uh-huh.
Watson Mallett was an able auctioneer. Charles Thayer had a greenhouse behind his house on Eagle Street, and he enlarged it after some time. Clarence and Bela Stanglin were brothers, and they were carpenters. Frank Plummer and Truman Toms were also carpenters, and they worked together. And then Fred Bain was a carpenter, and Leonard Bain and his sons, three sons, became carpenters. And all of them built many houses in Lindenville. Cement sidewalks were laid all over the village by Thomas Nye. Norman Allen was an excellent mason. Quincy Bentley did many houses as a painter, and he painted carriages. At that time, it was horse and buggy days.
Sure.
Bert Thomas was a painter and decorator. From about 1890, George Stokes had a grocery and dry goods store downstairs, which Earl Henyon took over. And upstairs For many years, we enjoyed all kinds of entertainment. It was Stokes's Opera House. And the Yates Dramatic Club put on Soldier of Fortune. And also, another home talent play, Old Maid's Convention, was put on February 13th, 1900. And it filled the Opera House, which could seat 400.
That's quite a sizable building.
Oh, yes. It's the whole top of that double store. There were 21 actors in it. C.S. Snook was the amazing Mr. Makeover with his remodelscope machine, which would make a person into what each wanted to be. The person entered from the top. It was quite a good-sized machine. A person entered up the stairs, down through the top, and you'd hear a sound, and they would come out the other side at the bottom. A person wanted to be thin, a fat lady would go in the top, and a thin lady would come out at the bottom. An old person wanted to be young would do the same. You see, that's where they got so many characters, because someone else always took the place. Gray hair would come out with light or dark. A non-singer would come out as a vocalist. A woman wanted to be a man, she'd come out different. Or she wanted to be an angel. And the admission was 15 cents.
My goodness.